Good morning, my name is Keegan Rasko, and I'd like to welcome you to Life Downstream. Life Downstream is a radio show where I, a high school student, and my English teacher, Mr. Andrew Morgan, talk to interesting people from around the area about their life experiences and how those experiences allowed them to learn outside of the classroom. And with that, I'd like to pass it over to Mr. Morgan to introduce our guest for today.
We're here today with Michael Postlewaite. He is a student at Astoria High School. He's a senior, and I'm really excited to have Michael on the show today. He is a student that I had in class last year, and I wanted to talk to him about a couple different things. One of the most interesting things I can't wait to hear about is some of his experiences with fishing. Michael is a talented fisherman. He has competed at the state level representing our school, and actually won a state championship in bass fishing 2 years ago with another student at our school, Leo Matthews. Michael, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.
So for people that don't know a lot about bass fishing or competition fishing in general, can you tell us a little bit about how that works? If you go to a tournament, what's it like? What's the process like?
The format of the bass tournaments is generally you show up. They're typically 1 day events for the high school. Sometimes there's 2 day events, but you go out and you catch your five biggest fish, or I should say, you keep your five biggest fish, five biggest bass, and you bring them into weigh in, and you weigh your five fish, and basically most weight wins. It's called culling, C-U-L-L-I-N-G, and it's basically if you catch a bigger fish than a fish that you already had throughout the day, you can take out your smaller fish, keep your bigger fish, so you slowly add your weight up and up, etc., etc. And then on the 2 day events, if you're fishing one of those, your weight compounds and it's a 2 day total. In the high level tournaments where people actually make a living out of it, you know, they're 3, 4, 5 day events. Basically.
So there are people that just go from tournament to tournament and they can win enough money at these that they are surviving entirely off of bass tournaments.
Yeah. So there's three organizations right now that are kind of running like the big mainstream tournaments. There is FLW, Fishing League Worldwide, the BASS organization, Bass Organization, and then MLF, Major League Fishing. And so the high level tiers of each one, FLW has the FLW Tour, then it's the Bass Elite Events, and then it's the Major League Fishing Bass Pro Tour. And so for the Major League Fishing, it's an invite only, and so this past year was the first season that they ever ran it. They just had their championship actually last week, 2 weeks ago, something like that. That was an invite only, so to be part of that, you had to have already, you know, established your name in FLW and Bass, and then they were like, hey, you want to come fish MLF in this new tournament style, blah blah blah. But then for FLW and Bass, they have like lower level tournament brackets, and basically it's like a tournament within a tournament. You just slowly work your way up the tournament. They're called like tournament trails, and so you start at the low, you know, if you throughout the year and all the different tournaments, if you place well enough, you can move on to the next one, etc. And so you can actually make a living out of it through tournament winnings. But what
are we talking about for, you know, let's say somebody wins one of these kind of pro level tournaments, what can they win in prize money?
Typically, so for Major League Fishing, I think to win one of their events, it's $100,000.
What?
Yeah.
I need to learn how to fish.
Yeah, $100,000. And then the championship is $300,000.
Wow.
Yeah, and then for FLW and Bass, I think their mainstream tournaments are a typical event is 125, and then 300,000 for their championship. And the reason FLW and Bass have is that extra 25,000 is because they charge entry fees. And so to even fish one of the events, you have to pay $5,000 or something like that.
Whoa.
To even fish the event. And so there's more money to give back to the angler, but
so do MLF you, doesn't do that. As you're doing these kind of high school level tournaments, is a small part of you thinking, I want to practice so that I can kind of keep doing this as an adult, or Definitely. Do you anticipate, do you feel like you're competing at the high school level, and realistically as an adult, you think you're just going to do this for pleasure. It's going to be a hobby. Is there any aspiration to kind of do it part-time or do it professionally in some way?
Yeah, it's what I want to do as a living, either, you know, doing the tournament fishing, or being involved somehow, because you can definitely make a very good living being, you know,
like a guide service or something, or
yeah, guiding, or you know, even just being like a product manager for one of the big companies, and they send you to like all these different sports shows to, you know, promote products, and so you're not just, you know, sitting in an office, or, you know, there's no way I'm going to be able to sit in a cubicle all day. I mean, I won't be able to do that, but so shooting for the stars, but hopefully, you know, I can make it.
So my mother has been bothering me for a long time about this, so I know it's probably on the minds of our listeners, but what bass in particular, you don't catch bass for eating, correct? That's not what you do, and well, in most cases, but what do you do with the fish, especially after you're done with them?
Okay, so yeah, so for tournament fishermen, there's kind of a motto. It's called let them go, let them grow. So, you know, catch and release. You catch them, you take your picture, you weigh them or whatever, and then you let them go so you can catch them again later when they're bigger. Some people do eat them. I know that a lot of people advocate for, so there's three types of bass. There's largemouth, smallmouth, and spotted bass. And then, I mean, there's some subspecies, but those are like the three big ones. And so, like, on the upper Columbia River, there is just an ungodly amount of smallmouth bass. And so bass are predators, and so they'll eat the salmon smolt that go through. And so there's a lot of people saying, you know, keep the smallmouth that you catch, you know, they're wreaking havoc on the salmon, you know, that's a bigger resource, you know, more people rely on the salmon than smallmouth. And supposedly they taste good. I haven't caught one. But in terms of, you know, the tournament fishermen, we're very big on conservation. So we want to release the fish back. We want to, you know, help that fishery, because every fish that you release is a fish that can, you know, spawn again and put more fish into the water. And so then after the tournament, depending on what tournaments they are, you know, you'll actually give your fish to a live release boat, and they'll put them in like this big tank, and then just go put fish in different parts of the lake, so you're not just all clumping them by the dock if it's a small tournament, and you know, you can just dump them right at the dock. Kind of depends, but in the tournaments, all the fish go back into the water, and if you bring in a dead fish, there's actually penalties. There's like a different tournaments have different things, you know, typically it's like a pound for every dead fish, you know, they subtract off your actual weight.
I want to kind of back up a step and hear how you got into this, because, you know, there are not, I think at Astoria High School, we have what, around 600 students, give or take?
Yeah, about 550.
And so there are only a couple at the school that are fishing kind of at this level, or that are really interested in bass specifically.
Literally,
how did you
a couple.
Get in? Yeah, literally a couple. Right? So, I think on your state championship winning team, there were two, right? It was you and your partner.
Yep.
So, how did you get into this?
So, I got into fishing from my dad many years ago. I'm almost 18 now. I probably started fishing when I was three, and I grew up salmon fishing, sturgeon fishing, rock fishing, you know, everything that's typically associated with Oregon and the Columbia River.
And so your dad prefers fishing on the Columbia, or has he gotten into bass?
He's gotten into bass too. He definitely, once I leave, he won't be as motivated to do it as much. I'm kind of the driving force. He definitely does enjoy it, but he'll keep up with it a little, but I think he'll gravitate back towards, you know, what he grew up doing and what he has a passion for. So he got me into like salmon, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then, I actually met my tournament partner, Leo, and his grandma has a little pond lake behind her house, and there were bass in it. And we'd go, you know, this is seventh grade. We'd go and we'd bass fish, you know, just very rudimentary level, you know, and it was just a fun day or whatever. And then it was, I think it was like freshman year. I really started getting into it. Eighth grade freshman year, I really started getting into it. And then I started looking looking at it a little more and realize that there's like these tournaments and, you know, there's actually a way to do it as a living and like do it more than just fun fishing. And so, I convinced my dad to go in halvesies with me on the boat that I have now. And that was in November of my sophomore year.
Okay.
November of my sophomore year. Then we were looking into the Oregon high school tournaments. And so the first one was April comes before May, right? Yeah. April of the next year. So November, December, January, February, March, April. So like 5 months of, you know, having a boat, really getting into it. We actually wound up winning that first tournament we fished. And it was like a huge thing. And it was a funny story. We rolled up and, I by no means like fish with the nicest equipment, but we roll up to the tournament and we see this one of the teams that has like a, you know, $60,000 bass boat, super super nice, and we're like, oh, what are we doing? We're way out of our element, and we actually wound up winning it.
Wow!
And so then it
what
was.
What did that feel like? What was that moment like?
It was like, oh wow! It's hard to like go back and relive it, but
because you don't know, like when you're fishing, you don't know what the other boats have, right?
Yeah.
So
you're blind.
Is there just this moment? There's this big reveal at the end where everybody comes in and they're like, they just tell you, you know, like you don't know when you get a big fish. You're like, oh, we just won.
Yeah, yeah, and so you all bring your fish in, and then the tournament director, you know, you weigh them all together. Excuse me, and yeah, so we actually wound up winning. It was like, whoa,
we can do this.
We can do this.
And to go to state, do you have to have a couple qualifying wins or something? Or how does it work to compete at the state tournament?
So for Oregon, because there's not many boats doing it, we actually run a multi-series tournament trail. And so the year that we won it, there were two tournaments, and so it was based on like a point scale. So first gets X amount of points, second gets X amount of points, most points at the end wins. And so then last year we did four tournaments, and same thing, first gets X amount of points, second, et cetera, most points wins. And then this year we're actually having six, and I think we're sitting in first right now for this year. Last year we did not do very well. This year we're sitting in first. But anyway, back to the first year that we won. So we won that first tournament and we were sitting first in points. We go to the second one, and just like that moment of that you just referenced of not knowing what anyone else has, it was up at, the Dalles on the Columbia River, and within 30 minutes we probably had, I think we had close to 14 pounds, which is pretty good. We were like, wow, because we had pre-fished it the week before and did not do good. Anyway, we were hot-headed. We were like, wow, we have this in the bag. So we like really slacked off. I think we like sat down, had lunch, you know, took like half an hour. Yeah. And then we actually wound up showing up to weigh in, and a dude beat us by 4 pounds, which in a tournament, especially when like the average fish size is pretty close, like 4 pounds is a lot. And we're like, and he had a 5 pound kicker and a 5 pound smallmouth. I mean, that's probably nothing to you. That's a big smallmouth. Like anywhere in the country, that's a big fish.
I was gonna ask, those 14 pounds that you got right up front, how many fish was that spread out over?
That's five.
Five fish.
Five fish. Okay. Yeah. So
five fish or 14.
Okay. Yeah, about two and a half, three. Yeah, okay. was our average. And so they had 18 pounds, with a 5 pound. It's called a kicker fish. You know, fish that really boost your bag. And we were like, well, and that was. I'm a big proponent of trying to learn a lesson every time you go out on the water. And our lesson that day was, don't get too cocky, you know, always think that someone's ahead of you. But we had enough points. We finished second that tournament. And so we finished second. And so we had a first place finish, second place finish. So we actually wound up winning the state tournament, which qualified us for nationals, which was in Alabama. And unfortunately, Leo, my partner, was in Fiji for
the science trip last year or whatever.
Yeah, I think it was Fiji. He was in Fiji. He couldn't go, so I actually went and fished it myself. Did not do good. Finished like middle of the pack. Then he couldn't go again this past year, but we didn't even win. So I went with the guy who won it. Didn't win again. Didn't do very well. But
so this year you're on a mission.
Yeah, this year we're on a mission.
This is your last chance, right?
Yeah,
as a high school student to do it. So
yeah,
so cool. I'm really curious when, you know, you said earlier that like you're really thinking of trying to do this as a career. And, you know, one of the themes of our show is trying to ask people, okay, what have different experiences in their lives taught them? And, you know, what have they gained from some of these things? It sounds like, you know, in a short amount of time, you have kind of gained a confidence in this realm that is really palpable. It's really tangible. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, you know, when you're thinking like, hey, I might try to do this as a career, you know, kind of deep down that like you have what it takes to potentially win some of these. Are you surprised by that? Like, I don't know. Does it feel like, it doesn't feel like a fluke anymore, right? When you're winning some of these, like you're going out onto the water and you're like, I am pretty sure that I'm going to end up in the top three because I know what I'm doing, because mm-hmm. I don't know. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, totally. So, little bass biology, bass do different things, you know, based on certain times of the year. And so, one of the hardest parts besides catching is actually finding bass and finding where they are, finding where they're holding, finding what they're set up on. And then, you know, the second part of that is actually putting the right bait in front of their mouth that they want to eat. And so just like you were talking about, you know, the having the confidence to actually feel like you're meant to be there. The first time I felt that is when, I had a tournament in California with my dad. It was on Lake Berryessa in March. And that's, it's kind of like the beginning of, what's called the pre-spawn, blah, blah,
bad
blah.
Stuff.
Yeah. Bad stuff. yeah, we went down and it was my first time ever fishing in California on this lake that fishes completely different than any of the lakes I fished. It's a reservoir lake. So deep, lot of rock. It has all three species in it: smallmouth, largemouth, spotted bass. You can do so many different things. You know,
So when you go to a lake like that, I mean, are you doing advanced research? Are you and your dad talking strategy, like when before you go? Tell us about what
yeah, you
like
do
to prep for that.
You do a lot of it. It's a lot of you. I want to say you do, like Googling, you know, just fishing reports or, you know, YouTube videos from kind of like that time area, seeing what people are fishing, looking at contour maps of like the lake bottom to see like different depths and et cetera, et cetera. So you do like that pre-research, and then typically you get out like the day before and you try to like pre-fish it. But we got in, I mean, it's like a 14-hour drive from here. And so we didn't get to. And so the first time we fished was in that tournament. And, so we got up, we went and fished, you know, I had a game plan. I was like, all right, I think they're going to be doing this. Water temps at this, water clarity's at that, you know, they should be here, I should be throwing that. And it didn't, the first plan didn't pan out. And so when that happens, you kind of get like, oh, one of those like heart pains. You're like, oh man, you know, what am I doing? I'm lost now. But we were able to recover. I was like, all right, well, let's go try this other thing. We went, we found fish. I actually wound up finishing second out of like 30 to 40 in the youth bracket. And, together we finished 30 something out of like 120 on a lake that we had never fished before, against guys that live in that area, fish it all the time. Hmm. So that was like one of the, I'm doing something right moments. You know, I can do this. I can go fish a body of water I've never fished before. Big confidence boost, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of propelled, you know. From that moment, I've had tournaments where I've done really well, had tournaments that I've done really bad, have tournaments mm-hmm. where I haven't figured out where I have. Yeah.
So on top of that, you're also a full-time high schooler. So I'm curious, what is it like when you have to go into Mr. Jackson's office and ask for an excused absence for fishing? What is that like? Or have you ever done that?
I don't. I think I have my parents do that.
But before the show, we had chatted just briefly about, and you know, I know this is kind of a huge topic, and trying to kind of squeeze it into 10 or 15 minutes is kind of ridiculous, I guess. But I'm going to try to do it anyway. I asked you a little bit before the show about, because you are the first student that we've had on the show, you know, you're our youngest guest so far as a high school senior, I wanted to ask you a little bit about what it's like being a high school student in 2019.
Yeah, there's definitely things that are super, super nice that of being, you know, here in 2020, you know, kind of the modern times, if you will. But then there's also, you know, the downside to it. But being able to take college classes at high school and graduate with 2 years of college already done.
That's kind of a new thing, right?
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, I don't remember people doing this when I was in high school, and last 5-10 years, it seems like this has really kind of blown up, like people taking, you know, community college classes at the high school level.
You know, I actually had the same plan, but I was advised by multiple people that I wanted to not get my associate's degree. I was on track for it, but then I pulled out because it was actually noted that if I would be viewed as an incoming sophomore if I went in with an associates of Oregon transfer, and that lessens the amount of scholarship money that you can get.
Oh,
so I actually had to back up and kind of take more classes at the college, and I'll still end up with a significant amount, but who knows if those be transferable.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. But it's an interesting thing to juggle, and I'm sure much of our listeners are thinking, wow, I wish they had that when I was in high school.
Oh, I totally wish I could have done that when I was in high school. I didn't even think it was an option. I didn't know how to do it. You know, I don't know, this idea of Oregon Promise and all that and getting kids kind of a head start. It's just such a cool thing. So
Yeah, no, it's super handy for sure. And then, you know, I mean, there's these right here, you know, phones and technology.
So you're grouping that in the positive side. You're not, or are you going to group that in the positive side and the negative side?
That's definitely
you're
going to
get to that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. it's definitely handy, being able, you know, we can't afford a math book in calculus for every one of the students, but being able to have an online math book so everyone can have it in class
because
everyone has a smartphone. Yeah. Super nice. But on the downside of that, you know, there's a lot of struggles with, you know, online bullying.
Talk to me about that. Like, do you feel like there's a lot of pressure around maintaining this online identity and, you know, and keeping up with everything happening online among peer groups? And is that like a pressure that you feel?
For me personally, like I only have an Instagram, and I use that strictly for promoting like my fishing content, trying to, you know, get people to notice me, etc. I don't use that as like a personal, like, I mean, it's like, I want to use it as, you know, the classic.
It's not a source of drama for you. There's not stuff blowing up on it that you have to manage.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, trash talking anyone, you know, because I mean, everyone says now if you go to a job, they're going to look at your social media,
which is definitely a fact.
Scholarships for college, they'll look at your social media. Mm. You know, if you have a link to, you know, that the demoralizing stuff or the demoralizing part of social media, you know, you might get passed up for, you know, if they see that your online presence is different from your actual, you know, in self presence.
In an actual study, I think that we were introducing in the class this week, like something like 46% of people were rejected upon looking at social media, which is think about that. One in every two people who apply for a job, your social media takes you out of the race.
Insane. I know. I've definitely applied. There was a job that I applied for in the past where with your application, you had to include links to your Facebook profile and just I think it was Facebook and Instagram. And it just surprised me, like, whoa, companies are doing this now. That's just surprising.
Yeah.
But I've definitely noticed a generational difference for me particularly too. It's like, you know, my parents' generation are going to be the ones to post, or they're the ones that are more likely to post something stupid like their political opinions online, you know, spew that stuff everywhere.
That's,
but at our grade, it's
that's
less
true.
Yeah.
Because my parents do the same thing. Like my dad will get into like politic
debates.
Try to change, you know, somebody's mind over 50 Facebook comments.
Yeah, exactly. and then there's me as because I'll use some of the accounts I follow are like news accounts or whatever, and I'll see, you know, X happened, and then people will comment X things, and it's like you read it and you're like, do I really want to invest the time when I know nothing's going to change? And you just scroll down and then you just keep going.
I'm curious if you feel like, you know, it is just insanely stressful to be a high school student in 2019. I have a lot of students that seem like they're struggling with responsibilities and just managing stress. Do you feel like has it been kind of just a stressful couple years as you've moved through the high school experience?
To answer that, I think I'd have to go, I think it floats from person to person. Typically, I'm a very, very stress-free person. There have been only I get an eye twitch when I'm super stressed, like my eyelid legitimately like starts twitching, and that's when I know it's like I'm like really stressed out. And it does not happen often. I think it happened like once last year during finals, and then you know like one other time.
I wish I had such a physical like indicator that would like tell me that I was stressed, because I feel like
it's
I
weird.
Get stressed and then I don't really realize it until like I'm way overstressed and I'm like, wait, I've been stressed for the last X amount of time.
Yeah, it's weird. No, it'll like I'll like be, you know, just cramming for finals, and yeah. And then you know my left eyelid will just like start quivering sometimes.
But so you feel like in general it has been fairly manageable, like workload and, you know, just managing all your responsibilities. It's been pretty manageable.
For me, yes. And I think there's a lot more factors that go mm-hmm. in. I think it's very hard to split it up between the entirety of, you know, the student
sure.
body.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, factors of, you know, what's your home life, you know, what classes are you taking, what you want to be.
What are you doing outside of school?
Exactly.
What's the work you're doing?
Exactly. So there's definitely factors that, you know, build in. I think it is very easy to get caught up in the stressfulness of it. I mean, you constantly have people reminding you, you're not going to succeed if you don't get good grades. You know, you're not going to go to college. You know, if you don't go to college,
there's
all this
uncertainty about the future, right?
Exactly. And
do you feel like, you know, fishing has been a huge part in managing that stress, or like,
Absolutely. Or
just like making it so you don't feel stressed out?
Absolutely. Like
tell me more about that.
The biggest stress reliever is when I'm just out there by myself fishing. It's like, and you're out there, you're in nature. I mean, it sounds like pretty cliche, but you're out there, you're listening to the birds chirping, you know, you're out there by yourself. It's just.
So Michael, what's coming up next?
We actually have a tournament in out of Newburgh on the 14th for the high school 14th. Oh, so next Saturday, I guess it is, week from today. Today's the 7th, isn't it?
Yep. It's coming up.
Yeah. So next week. Okay. I mean, it is in Newburgh. And the thing about tournaments, if it's not televised, there's not much to watch because they're like out on the lake or river or whatever.
But if people are interested in following up on your story, I mean, they can you know, after that tournament, they can Google and see how things went. And
yeah.
So Newburgh tournament. September 14th.
Yeah, it'll probably, depending on how we do it, we might try to get a write-up in the paper like the last one.
Cool.
If you want to follow my Instagram, Michael underscore postawait, go give me a follow.
Okay. Cool.
Thank
you so much for coming on our show, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Thanks for having me.
So this is the section of the show where I give my student perspective on our guest in the studio today. And one of the reasons I was very excited to have Michael on our show was that he's actually in the process of doing something that most people will never do in their lives. And throughout our series, we've heard from a lot of people who kind of took a step off to do something that they didn't know if it would work or not. And Michael's really interesting because he's doing that thing currently. You know, he's in the process of stepping into unknown waters, so to speak, and it'll be really interesting to see where he goes. And judging from our interview today, I have a feeling that he will be very successful. And also, he offers an interesting perspective into what it's like to be young right now. It's a very different world from just 10, 20 years ago with a technological revolution, and it's interesting to see how our kids and how people are adapting to the vast changes in our society. And it'll be really interesting to see exactly how those kids are different transferring into adulthood. So if there's one thing we learned from Michael today, it's that we should always do the things that we love to do, even if they might be a little scary in the beginning. And also, don't forget to call into KMUN for this week's Pledge Drive. If you can help our station, we can continue to provide you guys with great content. Thanks.